So here we are on the morning of our third day of this magical mystery tour. All aboard. The first 2 days we were just kind of getting used to being here on the bus, getting used to who we're with and how our seat is, and now we're passing the outskirts of the city and going into uncharted territory. And so it begins this morning with this period, which is usually our instructions for the day, is now the Dharma talk for today. And I would like to begin with this poem from Rilke. Entering. So good already. Entering. Whoever you may be, step into the evening. Or step onto the boss. Pardon me, Rilke. Step out of the room where everything is known. Whoever you are, your house is the last before the far off. With your eyes, which are almost too tired to free themselves from the familiar, you slowly take one black tree and set it against the sky, slender, alone. And you have made a world. It is big and like a word still ripening in silence. And though your mind would fabricate its meaning, your eyes tenderly let go of what they see. So how have these first 2 days on the bus been? Maybe we'll just do a show of hands if you're willing to participate. If you're feeling still, you don't have to. But has there been any sloth or torpor, any tiredness, any fatigue? Yes. any restlessness, agitation, regret, remorse, uncertainty stirred up? Yeah. And sensual desire. We don't get so many hands up for this one because we're like, well, no, I don't do that. but if we turn the phrase to desire for sense experience, desire for sense experience. So, wanting, you know, another piece of dessert. Missing your favorite soft socks that you left at home. Or and it's not always pleasant, like wanting just some sensory experience. I think there'd be more hands for that one. And ill will. Is there been noticing any judging mind, any comparing mind, like, whoa, she took more of that than she should have. Or they're walking so quickly. this is ill will. And maybe all of the above. Yes, all of the above. So these are the five hindrances, which many of you know very well, and some somewhat. And what I'd really like you to hear right now is that you can see it's part of the practice. There's nothing wrong with you. You're not doing it wrong. We're all on the bus. In these first 2 days, we've been developing the first of 7 factors of enlightenment, factors of awakening, of liberation. A factor is something that contributes to an outcome, becomes a conditioned arising for enlightenment. This first factor is sati. This is the Pali word, sati, and it's most often translated as mindfulness. And another, perhaps, I think, more helpful rendering of the translation of sati is remembering. Remembering what it is, what the object of our attention is in any given period. And the mind moves away, and at some point there's noticing, and we remember, what am I supposed to be doing? Oh yeah, feeling my feet. And we begin again. So we've been settling and arriving and getting, hopefully, we dearly hope that you're getting caught up on some rest. And so we're remembering what the object is that we're paying attention to and opening to that again. When we're standing, opening to the experience of the sensations of the body standing. In the body scan, opening to the felt experience of the body as it sits. The sensations of breathing as it's happening. The sensations of the feet while walking. So this morning I would like to turn to the second factor of enlightenment, which is investigation. Molly spoke last night about patient endurance as an antidote to the hindrances. Our intention to show up and to be in and with the bodily experience of dukkha as it's showing itself. And in conjunction with this as an antidote to the hindrances is this factor of investigation. These two really go hand in hand so beautifully. We need to have patient endurance to still be here. Thank you for being here. And to continue beginning again and again, opening again and again with sati, with remembering. And we do this with kindness, with friendliness, gentleness to our experience, to our being. And we need to have patient endurance to develop this factor of investigation. It's like a candle. If you have like those little tea lights at home, and you can use them for a little while, but then the wax burns right down, and you try to light it, well, maybe I can still light it, but there's not enough wax there. You still have a wick, and you could light the wick, but it goes out. And so you need to have enough wax, enough candle, which is our sati, these days of developing mindfulness, the first factor, presence, opening. So we need to have that with the light of investigation, the illumination to what is happening. Yeah. The Buddha gave us the gift of really beautiful similes to describe these hindrances, and they're like poetry. They're just so so good. I think I love them so much because they really point to the visceral experience of the hindrances and not the story. They're really great. He describes how the hindrances obscure our clarity, obscure our ability to truly see, and they're likened to various states of a pond of water. So sloth and torpor, which almost all of us have experienced here, to some degree, perhaps everybody, is likened to a stagnant pool choked with weeds. There's that little pond right out the front of our place there, and it's getting kind of clogged up and murky, and the weeds are quite thick in it, and there's no clarity. You can't tell, are the fish underneath there, or are the fish gone, or you can't see the bottom. There's no clarity. And it feels like this when we're in that state of sloth and torpor, which is mucky and weedy and dingy. So when sloth and torpor are present, we use investigation, this second factor, to take interest in the felt experience of the breath. Remember, Molly guided us feeling, meeting with the beginning moment of the inhalation, the length of the inhalation, how it's felt, not visualized or imagined, the peak or turn of the breath. How is the length of the exhalation? Each time is different. Do we think we know how it is? How is it? The ending, how does it feel? This time. Fritz Perls, you may have heard this quote, it's great. It's brought Gestalt therapy to America, said, boredom is a lack of attention. Boredom is a lack of attention. So investigation with sloth and torpor. Our second hindrance that we've experienced, restlessness and remorse. Is likened to water that's been whipped up by the wind. Picture that pond and big winds coming from all different directions, chopping up the waves, and the waves are meeting and crossing, and there's no clarity, only turbulence. And we can use investigation as an antidote to work with this. To be aware of the body, to engage with our experience in a relaxed and open way. Staying spacious with our attention. When these states arise, investigate, how is this felt in the body? What is this? I'll say more about that later. Sensual desire, or desire for sense experience. The mind is likened to water that is has beautiful, bright, colored dyes dropped in it. All these wonderful colors covering the surface of the water, intermingling and moving together. Very beautiful. But again, no clarity. So if there's something that we're strongly yearning for here, or something that we're missing, I'm missing my doggies, cuddling with doggies. It colors our present experience when we're missing or yearning for some other experience, we're not really present to what is showing up right now. And so to use investigation to open to what is pleasant right now, no matter how subtle that may be. And it may seem like it's really No, there's none. That's not here. But see, how is it now? What is happening? What is felt? And the Buddha described ill will like simmering, steaming, bubbling, boiling water. The antidote here is really our metta practice, cultivating kindness to continue to show up again and again, this patient endurance and kindness and gentleness. With the last hindrance, doubt, the mind is like water that's clouded by mud. Mud. And here we cultivate commitment, patient endurance again, and we engage with the practice. What is being asked for right now? We have trust in our teachers, in the form of retreat, in the safety of this space, this center, and we rest with it. And engage with what is being asked for right now. So we can use this factor of investigation in these ways, but also just to know how it is with this hindrance presence. So just in the presence of the hindrance as it's showing, How is this? Bring investigation to what is this? I sat a retreat some years ago now with Stephen and Martine Batchelor, and Martine was ordained as a Buddhist nun in Korea, and she shares that her primary practice, I don't want to get it incorrectly, but I think it was like the main practice, as far as I know, for many years, was just asking, what is this? What is this? What is this? So we can bring this to our direct experience of the hindrances. What is this? Now, for some of us, this can be a little exciting with investigation. I know how to do that. Yay, it's so exciting. We think, on this magical mystery ride, I also got a little free ticket for a side trip into thinking land. This is so great. Investigation, right on. I'm so good at this. I can figure out this. This question, what is it? Just give me some time here and I'll just go. What is this? I'm going to get it. I'm going to figure it out. So I'm just getting a little spoiler alert here so that you don't have to spend too much time with that. No matter what it is you're experiencing or inquiring about and asking this question, there is no answer. There you go. You can't get it right, and you can't figure it out. Oh, I know. Some of you are thinking, oh, yeah, I can. This isn't the point. The point is not about the answer. The point is the question. Questioning, which brings inquiring, investigation, interest, presence. What is this? Means what is being felt? What is my bodily experience of what I'm calling tired or agitated? What is not the storyline? Is there heaviness? Is there vibration? Where is this felt? What is our felt experience of sense desire or ill will? Is there leaning? Is there contraction? Where is this felt? How is this? What is this, the visceral experience of doubt in this body? Not the storyline. What is this doubt? What does this feel like? Again, no need to figure it out, but to invite exploring. I loved Molly's description last night of showing up undefended. Such a good word, undefended. If we're telling ourselves that something's wrong with my experience and how I'm doing this, and I'm not doing it right, or it shouldn't be this way, then we're defended to what's really happening. We're not going to be able to really meet with how it is. To open to the investigation and experience the true nature of what is showing. In a way, it could be described as less mindfulness and more bodyfulness. Oh my God, that's pretty good. We should start a new trend. Bodyfulness. Pardon me. So we bring this investigation to both our formal practice and our informal practice, our daily life. Norman spoke, I think, on the first night about this sense of retreat feeling different than home life. And of course, in so many ways, it certainly is. But fundamentally, it's not. Same, same. Eating, walking, breathing, standing. So we can cultivate this wakefulness and presence in our daily lives through this factor of investigation. And we're practicing it here, creating some body memory of how to wake up. Last week before we came on retreat, I was walking in a park near our house, and I walk there often because there's a path connecting, and I wasn't paying attention at all. I was ruminating about something, probably about this retreat. It was probably that, because I was thinking about investigation. And so then waking up happened, and I was like, whoa, what are you doing? You know, heads looking down, and the brow was furrowed, and I'm like, this stopping happened for whatever myriad factors. And I saw where I was and that I was completely missing the experience. It was a beautiful spring day. Even if it was a crappy day, I would still be missing it. So it doesn't have to be beautiful. I'll get to that later. But and so then I kept walking, but I slowed down a little bit. And then there was noting happening, you know. It was dogs, wind, trees, sky. Just looking, seeing, noting the sensations and sense doors and smelling. And then I remembered Martine's teachings about what is this. And I stopped with a tree. And I just kept asking. Just breaking it down. What is this? What is this? What is this? What is this? Of course, I did finally figure it out and get the right answer, but no, kidding. And then there was a time where the questioning just dropped away, and just presence, and just continued walking. Wasn't to get to any place, but I just stayed until I didn't need to stay. But it seems to me that there's kind of two, I don't quite have the right word, two strands or two aspects of investigation. And they may be best interwoven, like a rope. But also, there's times when one approach may be more skillful than the other. I was in Costa Rica some years ago, and thankfully we had a guide take us into this national park for a tour. It's like a jungle, really. And of course, it's full of amazing things that I've never seen before. All kinds of crazy insects and birds and sloths, which are so cool, and snakes and spiders and all that stuff too. But we couldn't see anything. We couldn't see a thing. And so you'd walk along this path, and then there'd be a group of people stopped, and they'd be pointing and oohing and aahing, looking and taking pictures, and we're like, what? Can't see a thing. Really trying to see. Could not see. And then our guide, it's definitely worth getting the guide if you go, brings out his telescope, because he can spot this stuff, no problem. He's walking along, and he knows the territory, knows how to see. And so he would put up his telescope, and then, oh, it's right there. Why didn't we see that? After you see it, you see it. Well, actually not. Sometimes then you'd look away and you go, what? Where is it again? So it can be like that for us too. Like the guide who knew the territory, he could spot the stuff and find things for us to see. It can be like this for us too. We know this territory a little bit. Especially that, you know, you've been practicing for years. We know the arising of the hindrances, and we can learn how to look skillfully. So there's times when it's helpful to use this close inspection, this telescopic lens, can wake us up and snap us out of delusion, out of not seeing. We do this by slowing down our walking, really feeling. We do this by investigating the detailed experience of the breath, really feeling. Exploring the terrain of sensations in standing or body scan. But this detailed focus can also get tight, can get really tight, and can create tension and contraction if we always use that lens, always staying with that microscopic view. I was talking with a friend the other day about birders and their cameras with these huge lenses. And of course, they can see great detail and beauty and capture amazing images. But I was thinking, you know, maybe there's a bird right here on the branch beside them, but they don't see it. So we also need to have this big picture view. We also need to investigate our experience with spaciousness, both up close and wide, both curious and receptive. This is so important. Curious and receptive. Seeing the parts and seeing the whole. We've seen everyone settling here so beautifully on the retreat, and the weather has been so conducive to awakening this factor of investigation especially when we're outside. It's been so lovely to have this time to notice, to feel, to hear, to see, to smell, to touch. And, you know, with our amazing food, to taste what is present in our experience. And we may be noticing details that we often overlook in our daily lives. You know, how often do we sit on the grass and watch the ladybugs at home? How often do we just stop when we're on our way to somewhere and just feel the breeze on our face? So the pleasant can be an entry point. And then we can bring some investigation to see if there's some clinging to this pleasant experience, some leaning in, some holding on to, wanting to bring back, you know, the robin's egg with us, or the amazing flower we saw, or go home and grab our camera and get a picture of that animal we had an encounter with, whatever. Reminds me of, I was on a month-long retreat in Gaia House in England, beautiful place. You can imagine the gardens in England are amazing. And one day I walked past this bush that was out at the front drive, and, you know, the molecules of scent from the flower met with this nose, and it was so pleasant. It was so beautiful. Immediately, I could almost feel the brain light up. And even before I knew it, my face was like in the bush. It's just, yeah. And it's just fired up like a drug, like just, whoa, want more. And then this, not just smelling, but like, just trying to bury my face in there and inhale so deeply. Like, have you ever had that? Or maybe it's your morning coffee and you're like so it's that wanting more. It can feel a greedy, like, just, oh, I can't get enough of that. Smell of babies, puppies. Yeah. And that's just smelling. I mean, all of our sense doors are like this. Can we open to the experience, investigate the experience of seeing as it's happening with receptive eyes? Or are we sometimes staring, like holding eyes? Are we hearing with preference, searching out pleasant sounds, or opening to? Vibration meeting this eardrum. And then to open, to investigate, how is that leaning changing the felt experience? Are we as interested in the unpleasant as we are the pleasant? Are we as interested in investigating the unpleasant with the same curiosity? As was guided yesterday, exploring strong sensations in the body with gentle inquisitiveness and see what happens. What happens with the experience? Is it changing? What is the felt experience of aversion to unpleasant? What does it feel like? Not the storyline. And this is a time when it can be helpful to have that wider lens view, so that the storyline is almost like birds flying by on the horizon. Just see that. But there's a wider view of opening to the quality of the relationship, to what's our relationship to what is showing. And neutral. Do we space out? Do we even notice what is neutral? The majority of our experience in any given day is neutral. What? I thought it was unpleasant. See. Is it boring, maybe? But if we investigate neutral sensations and experiences, we might see that they are places of rest. There's no leaning. But if we're not awake to the presence of the neutral, we miss it entirely. It's said that only when we fully realize the evanescent nature of our own bodies and minds that we experience happiness, joyous anticipation. The evanescent nature of our bodies and minds is like this light bubbling, changing, morphing, arising and passing. And only when we are fully meeting with that does the experience that Norman talked about of joy arise. This is not a elated joy, is a calm joy, peaceful sweetness, presence. So what is it that we're really investigating? This is not just to wake up to seeing and knowing what's going on in and around us. That's our starting place. This factor is called Dhamma Vichaya. Am I saying it properly, Norman? Dhamma Vichaya. And Vikaya? Oh. Vichaya, thank you. And Vichaya is the word usually translated as investigation. But it's also a synonym for wisdom and insight. So when investigation is present, we're also developing, looking to wisdom and insight to how things are, the true nature of things, reality. The commentaries explain that in the context of investigation, the word Dhamma has an additional specific meaning. It refers to the individual states or qualities uniquely present in each object. The individual states or qualities uniquely present in each object, as well as the common traits many objects share with each other. I'll just read this from the sutta. In one who investigates and examines that state with wisdom and embarks upon a full inquiry into it, tireless energy is aroused. This is referencing how to work with that hindrance. Energy arises. On whatever occasion tireless energy is aroused in a bhikkhu, in a student, who investigates and examines that state with wisdom and embarks upon a full inquiry into it, on that occasion, the energy enlightenment factor is aroused in her and develops it, and by development, it comes to fulfillment. So what we are opening to with wisdom, what we are investigating, the true nature of how things are, is opening to feeling, knowing, seeing, arising and passing. We can feel this in our breath, in our steps. We can know this with our thoughts and feelings that come and go. We can hear this with the sounds. We can see this in nature. We can look in with a very close lens or with a wide, spacious lens. They're both valuable tools. And we can also know the unreliability of things that are arising and passing, can't be held to, can't be clung to, changing, impermanent, unreliable. And we also directly experience that we're not doing it. It's happening. We're meeting with it, opening to, feeling, experiencing, not doing. It's not me, it's not mine. So just to return again to that candle analogy, the practice of bare attention, of sati, of mindfulness, remembering, just that is futile, is too strong a word, but that's what's coming to mind, is incomplete, can be incomplete. We also need this illuminating flame of investigation. And in the same way, you can see, I'm pretty sure you know, that investigation on its own is pretty futile. It makes me think of a hamster in a cage on a wheel. Woo! We just can think about things and think about things and think about things. And round we go without insight. So into the true nature of dhammas, of things, of our experience. So we keep returning, remembering, opening to, beginning again, the direct experience of this body in this world. Bringing these two factors together. The other factors of the path follow. These are the two that we can really bring a strong intention to work with. I was at my niece's graduation recently, and there was a sign, it was for holistic nutrition, and they have a science teacher, and it was like the dreaded course because it was so complex and everybody found it very challenging, but everyone loved this teacher. They all cheered for this teacher, and she got up and spoke, and because she taught in a way that was really accessible for them, but she was also a Trekkie, and they just thought that was super cool. So she was always making Star Trek references through her science class, and they loved that. And she in her talk at the ceremony, she talked about something called Idik. Any Trekkies here will know this. And I hadn't heard it before, but I wrote it down right away. I thought it was so cool. IDIK. It's a Vulcan philosophy. And there's like an emblem and an award. There's a whole thing. But it means IDIK, infinite diversity in infinite combinations. I was like, yes. Yes, that's right. Idik. Oh, Vulcans, you. So smart. It's about the way that listening to 1,000 different viewpoints is still not enough to tell the whole story. But that doesn't mean you stop asking. Asking, what is this? Idik. It's good. I'll end with this short reading. A teacher, Eugene Cash, shared this about his teacher's teacher's teacher, who had said this, and is just bang on. So thank you, Eugene. I'm going to pass it on. So his teacher is Ajahn Mun. You awake? Here it is. It's good. In your investigation of the world, never allow the mind to desert the body. Examine its nature. See the impermanence, the selflessness of the body while sitting, standing, walking, lying down. When its true nature is seen fully and lucidly by the heart, the wonders of the world will become clear. Let's sit for a few minutes.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.